Well, sit back and relax, because tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to be talking about the living universe and also how we can build a promising future. Our special guest tonight, Dwayne Elgin, back on Coast to Coast AM. Dwayne Elgin, internationally recognized speaker and author and social visionary, looks beneath the surface of turbulence of our times to explore deeper trends that are transforming the world. Back in 2006, Dwayne received the Japanese Goei International Peace Award in addition to his recognition for contribution to a global vision. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Dwayne, how have you been?
I've been great, and George, it's great to be back.
I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be fun. What have you been working on lately?
Oh, golly. I've been looking at the world, and I'm very concerned. Not only about, the financial situation and climate and so on, but I'm concerned that we're not stepping back and taking a longer view of the human journey and telling ourselves a bigger story about where we could be going from here. We're kind of niggling away at the details and not handling the big picture. So that's later in the show, maybe.
We don't seem to have a direction, do we?
No, we're lost. We're wandering. And there's no one particularly to blame, I think, for that, because this is characteristic of the whole world. The entire world is in a place it's never been before. And so we're all trying to figure this out together, because we're, like it or not, we're all in this very close-quartered world now. In my lifetime, George, world population has tripled. I'm 68. 2.2 billion people when I was born. Now they're a little over 7. It's actually more than triple. So I'm really passionate about looking at images and stories of a promising future.
Let's take some time to talk about this promising future. We'll talk about the living universe next hour, Dwayne, because it concerns so many people. I mean, it's everywhere.
Yes.
And, I've had an opportunity while I'm here in St. Louis to see my 6 little grandchildren, and I do wonder, what will life be like for them when they're in their 20s, when they're in their 30s, when they're in their 40s? And, part of me hopes that life is the same. It's all cyclical, like what my dad went through in World War II, and then what we went through in the 60s and 70s, and now, what our kids are going through, and then what they're going through. But I'm not so sure. This time, it feels different to me.
Yeah.
It just feels like we're on a cusp of one way or another, and we could teeter either way. Don't you feel that way?
Yeah. And I think we can look really at the trends that are at work in the world and come to that conclusion and say, for example, only one time are we going to melt the ice caps. And we're only in Greenland. Only one time are we going to just completely overfish the oceans, as we apparently are about to do now. Only one time are we going to pump out all of the aquifers under San Diego, the L.A. Basin, the Texas, and so on. We're pumping out the groundwater, and it's collapsing, and that's not going to come back. I think only one time are we going to so disrupt the climate of the Earth. Only one time will we use up all the oil that's out there, the sort of growth hormone for the human species. Only one time. So we can just go down a long list, George, and we've got a lot of one-time events that are converging right now. And so I want to concur with you. I think we better take a hard look at what's happening here. And I don't pretend to have the answers, but boy, I'm ready to have the conversation.
You have talked, Dwayne, about 4 major great transitional events. Let's go through each one.
Sure.
And we'll digest them. Number one is humanity is growing up. Tell me what you mean by that.
All right. I've gone around the world. And, I've for the last 15 years, I've been giving talks in different places around the world. And before I give a talk, often I will ask the following question. Because I'm talking about the big picture of the human journey. And before I say anything, I ask people, well, what do you think? How are we doing? What life stage is the human family in? And I'll give you 4 choices. We're in a toddler stage, a teenage stage, an adult stage, or elder. four choices: toddler, teenager, adult, or elder. And then I give people about 5 minutes to think about it, talk with one another, and then vote on it. And around the world, I kid you not, again and again and again, people immediately understand the question. They have no problem with it. And around the world, overwhelmingly, people say we're in our adolescent stage as a species. Mm-hmm. We're in our teenage years.
Yeah.
And now, there's good news in that, because teenagers have a whole bunch of energy. They have a whole bunch of enthusiasm, idealism, and they say, I can do great things, just give me a chance. And I think that's where we are as a human family. We can do great things, just give us a chance here. Now, what does it mean when you grow up? It means one of the big things is, well, you get beyond the parental institutions that have dominated your life, and you have a new level of freedom. You can be more creative in what you do and how you relate. Well, what are the parental institutions? Well, it's big business, big government, big churches. And they have dominated our lives. And I'm saying it's time for a new level of freedom and creativity. And I'm not against those organizations. I'm not anti. I'm just for our maturity and our freedom that comes with our maturity and our growing up. So what do you get when you grow up? You get freedom. You get the responsibility of caring for the earth, the responsibility of being caring with one another, but you get freedom to relate in new ways. So there's real opportunity here. And it isn't simply a future of sacrifice. It's a future of freedom and opportunity and creativity.
Do you sometimes think, though, that we've been here before, something happened, maybe civilizations destroyed themselves, and we had to start all over again?
Well, you know, that is a really interesting question, and it's one that I have looked at for actually decades, to look to see if historically we've gone through this kind of a cycle once before. And as far as I can discern, and I'm open to learning on this, but as far as I can discern, this is a one-time happening of population, resources, the environment, and on all the elements I listed just a little while ago. So we are truly in a unique predicament that the human species has never in its entire history been in before. And so it's like the circle is closed. There's no escape. There's no frontiers left that we can go to. They're gone. And so we have to cope with one another. We have to learn how to get along with one another, and not just one another, but with also with the earth that's really in trouble. So I'm saying we can do it, but we have to get on with the job, you know. We can't just kind of sit back and assume mom and dad are going to take care of it for us, because they're not.
No, nobody's going to take care. You got to take care of it yourself.
That's right. So that's growing up. There's growing up for you.
But I do sometimes think we have been here before, and we failed, and we started over again, and we might have done it. You know, Michael Cremo, who's a guest on the program, Dwayne,
yeah,
and he's written a book on forbidden archaeology. He thinks that civilizations could be hundreds of millions of years old on this 5.5 billion year old planet. And if that's the case, we've done this a lot, and we haven't learned anything if that's the case.
Yes. See, now, I think that's just a fascinating hypothesis, and I am really interested in that. But I just have not found compelling archaeological evidence. So I'm really open to that, though, George.
And
but you asked, though, about the first, you know, story of promise. The story of promise, the first one, is that we can actually grow up as a human family, move from our teenage behaviors and into our adulthood, where we're actually caring for one another, caring for the earth, and caring for the universe as our sacred home.
Yeah, most of us there, but some of the people at the top, I think, are still back in the infancy stage.
Well, I think on any given day, all of us probably go up and down that whole spectrum. You know, my behavior certainly is an exemplary, you know, all day long. But nonetheless, what we're talking about is the center of social gravity. On average, how are we behaving as a human family? And, yeah.
The next one is the Global Brain Awakens. What's
yes.
that?
Well, golly, that's you, George. You and the reach of your program with over 500 stations and I don't know, several million people listening.
564 now, as a matter of fact.
Okay. This is it. I mean, you are demonstrating the technology that is weaving the world together into a collective thinking organism. And so the global brain waking up is simply using this technology, and it's just beginning. We're just beginning. But it's using the internet and using the wireless and all the rest to connect with one another in new ways. And as you well know, this has been a catalyst for revolutions in various parts of the world. So anytime we advance the technology of mass communication, and we're doing that in a profound way right now, we automatically advance civilization itself. So, and that is happening right now, and it's allowing us, hopefully, to communicate our way into a more promising future.
Well, there's no question that what has happened technologically is just exploded things on this planet. I mean, we see what happened with the Arab Spring.
Yeah.
That kind of organization could never have occurred without social networking.
That's right.
I mean, it's just, it's magical, and, you know, and I'm sensing with our show specifically, Duane, it's growing like crazy because there seems to be this need for people to have this.
Yeah.
Something's going on.
Definitely. People are have been passive long enough. I think many are fed up. And they're saying, look, I want to know really what's going on here. I've heard, you know, the mainstream news from corporate media, and I just don't, it doesn't tell me what's really happening. And so people are now looking for new sources, and so this is a part of it. The global brain turns on. It wakes up.
Well, look what's going on in Russia. Who would have thought that all these kids and young people would be protesting Putin, for example?
Putin?
I mean,
courageous. Boy.
Unbelievable. I don't know what's going to happen over there.
I think,
of course, he's blaming us for it.
Yes, yes. But those are courageous folks over there that are willing to protest Putin.
He could be a dangerous person.
Yeah.
So we shall see what happens there. But as this global brain awakens, what's next on the horizon? I mean, how many more things can we do? You know, we've got our cell phones, we've got our TVs, we've got our internet connection. I mean, what else is out there?
Oh, amazing, extraordinary transformations in the way of intelligent computer systems. Right now, I'm overwhelmed, as I think most people are, with materials coming in over the internet, over the their phones and this and that. Now, imagine that in another 10 to 15 years, you had an assistant that was a computer-based intelligent assistant, and it would filter through all of that, and it would then bring you the people and the context that you most value. And so what I think is we're going to see a whole new layer of intelligent computing that will be our partner in connecting at a global level.
Well, that could be too. Absolutely. Okay, your next one, you say humanity is on a heroic journey.
Yeah.
Where are we headed?
Well, this harkens back to where we started the conversation, saying this is a one-time, perhaps, if we accept that premise, a one-time event where we're coming together as a species. We're colliding in this perfect storm of trends. And for the last 45,000 years or so since we woke up as a human, you know, archaeologically in the record I've seen, it's been roughly 40 or 50,000 years we've been really building away with art, with tool technology, and so on. So for the last 40 or 50,000 years, we've been on a journey of separation. We've been pulling back from nature. We've been pulling back from one another. And we've been differentiating ourselves. We've been becoming more and more unique. And so that's our heroic journey, one of growing that unique capacity. And here we are. We almost went extinct 72,000 years ago. And right now, we have gone from near extinction to just utterly dominating the Earth with over 7 billion people. So the heroic journey has now gone from separation to initiation. We are in collision, and that collision is an initiation to see if we can reconcile ourselves to living together on this small planet. And if we can do that, the next stage in the heroic journey is return. We return to our home, the living universe that sustains us. And we return with new lessons along the way of how to learn with one another, how to live happily on this small earth, and so on. So that's the heroic journey.
But what happens, Dwayne, if somebody pushes the button? All of a sudden, this heroic journey turns into a disaster, turns into chaos.
Oh, absolutely.
And it could spread throughout the planet, can it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I am so surprised. Early 1970s, I worked at this think tank, Stanford Research Institute, now SRI International.
Sure, yeah.
And we looked at all kinds of ways in which, this is for the President's Science Advisor, ways in which things could go wrong, they could go bad. And I am really amazed that there have not been more acts of terrorism, for example, biological terrorism or other forms. We're a much more vulnerable species than we realize, I think, and we've been very fortunate so far.
So far, until something big happens.
Yeah. Now, see, here's what I'm saying. There are many ways. I sit down and I talk to people, and they'll give me 10 different ways this Earth can go into a new dark age, nuclear, chemical, biological, financial, you name it. And then I say, okay, great, got it. Now tell me, how can we envision a promising future? What does that look like that we would all relate to, we'd all understand? And they scratch their heads, but if you put up the whole image, the whole story of growing up, people say, oh, yeah, well, of course, I've done that. Well, yeah, we could grow up. And all of a sudden, the human journey is reframed. They can say, yeah, this is possible. We can do this, of course. See what I'm saying? So I know there are many ways in which to see this go bad, but what I want to emphasize are the really interesting, exciting ways it can go good for us.
One of my favorite poems by Robert Frost, The Road Not Taken.
Ah, yes.
How many people on this planet do you think take the wrong path?
I think we're all doing the best we can, actually. I actually do. I think we're doing the best we can. And but I do think it's time for us to come together and talk about what is together the right path. It's not saying it's to be the same for all of us, but we need to have some degree of alignment so we're not just fighting with one another constantly.
Well, see, I think if that Pied Piper, like a Hitler, goes down the wrong path, millions of people will follow that kind of a person.
I think it's very likely.
Yep, and that's dangerous.
It's very dangerous. And I think the way to deal with that danger is to say, hey, look, this danger could happen. Let's pay attention here. Let's not go to sleep. And so if the Pied Piper does come along, you George, are ready to, you know, call the game and say, look, here's what's going on. Let's step up as citizens and take responsibility here.
We will do that. When we come back, let's talk about humanity and consciousness. And then later on, of course, with Dwayne Elgin, we'll get into the living universe. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. With our special guest tonight, Dwayne Elgin, as we talk about the living universe, we're going to get into consciousness next when we roll right back on Coast to Coast AM. The fourth area of transition that you talk about is humanity is consciously evolving. Let's talk about that consciousness. First of all, what's your take on this?
Well, this is just very straightforward. It means, are we paying attention? And I think both the scope of our attention and the depth of our attention as a species has been growing over time. And, for example, I grew up on a farm as a kid, and the scope of my attention was very, very small. And it is now, for many people, it's global in scope, our ability to pay attention and to see what's going on. At the same time, there's more depth because through the vehicle of science, we're beginning to explore the nature of consciousness itself. And so we're beginning to use the tools of science to explore the nature of consciousness, so consciousness is beginning to know itself. So there's both more scope, more depth, and we're waking up as a species. We're paying attention. We're paying attention in new ways that that are just changing the whole world. And I think the whole theme, the whole world is watching, would apply so much to the Arab Spring. I think it's going to apply to the Tea Party, the Occupy, and the rest. People that want a hearing, finally, and it's not specific to any partisan point of view. It's us that are finally paying attention with sufficient scope and depth to say it's time to step up, and this is our transition. And we were talking about stories of great transition. This is a great transition that's happening right now to the human family.
Sure. Is there anything that governments can do to slow this down aside from, you know, attacking their constituents?
Well, I think governments can do a lot to slow this down and to be distracting and to be in many different ways. I don't see, as I said earlier, I don't see governments being supportive of this kind of rising up of people asserting their frustrations and their right to express. We want a different kind of future here. And I see this takes some courageous souls, whether it's in this country, in Russia, or other parts of the world. We're looking at, I think, a very historic time beginning to emerge right now.
You're a social visionary as well, Duane. Are you in awe, in shock, in disbelief, or did you expect this with this awakening?
Well, you see, since 1978, I've been saying professionally that by the 2020s, we would be hitting this perfect storm of these trends that I spoke about earlier of climate and population and resources and so on. And so I've been expecting this for decades. What I have not expected is how lackadaisical the response to that would be. I thought people would step up and say, look, our future and the future of our kids and grandkids is now at stake. It's now at stake. Let's pay attention here. Let's be heroes, not villains. Let's wake up our global brain. Let's grow up and be adults here. I'm surprised that we haven't done so, and I'm actually very concerned about our future.
Why do you think that hasn't happened? My take would be because most people are doing relatively okay. We haven't seen that balance of power shift yet. Even though I think the middle
right.
class is being eroded away,
right.
there are a lot of people out there that are still employed and they're still making their mortgage payments and they're okay. And those are the people who aren't going to be concerned right. as much as those people who are out of work or they're seeing the Wall Street ripoffs
right.
and things like that.
Right.
If that gets higher, I think we got a real problem.
Right. I think looking at the fragility of the global economy, I think this well could get higher. And I think the way to for this to transform from almost certainly conflict into a place of cooperation would be through communication. And let's use our tools of mass communication to come to a new level of understanding of one another. Let's have the Tea Party and the occupiers and all the rest come together in conversation. Let's see if we got common ground here. My guess is there's more common ground than we might think.
When people get together collectively with the conscious mind, and it seems that it mends together, do you think they can do some incredible things with
Definitely. I have seen it in my own life, and I'm sure you have, that, as I said earlier, it's like the teenage mentality of saying, you know, a hidden sense of greatness where they say, look, I can just feel it inside myself. Just give me a chance. Just let me show you I can do something great here. And I think that's how the human family feels, that come on, give us a chance here. Let's not have these institutions, these parental institutions, holding us down. Let's liberate ourselves and begin to build a future of sustainable prosperity, because it's not prosperity that's sustainable right now. So let's redesign ourselves into a future that really does work for us.
Let me ask you a little bit, though, of evil. What happens if evil collectively gets together? Then what happens?
See, I don't accept that premise, that there is such a thing as evil. I do accept that there is ignorance, and I do accept that there is misunderstanding and misdirection and so on. And there are your social, psychological pathologists and such. But nonetheless, I think the biggest threat to our future is our own lack of attention to what's going on, our lack of using our global brain to wake ourselves up and really pay attention to our adolescent ways, if you will. And that if we would, for example, take back the airwaves that are ours, that are legally ours, and use a small portion of those airwaves not to stand in the streets and wave signs, but to go into the studio and to talk responsibly and respectfully, it would transform the conversation of democracy.
Instantly?
Within weeks. Within weeks, you could have communities stepping up to a new level of conversation and interaction, and with the internet, that's easy. And so it isn't just a one-way flow, it's an interactive dialogue. And you could not only see how the general public, but maybe the young folks, the old folks, different groups feel about things. And let's, instead of just a sign or whatever in the streets, we can do better than that. Your quote, you know, Ronald Reagan said, you know, freedom is only one generation away from extinction. This generation has to stand up, claim its freedoms, or they're going to be extinguished, I feel. And so this is a very pivotal time for citizenship.
What could screw that up?
A lot of things, George. Go on, a lot of things. I think, for example, the way that our mass media is now being used, it's really selling eyeballs to the person that has the most amount of money. And it's not a matter of serious politics at all. It's a matter of ads and campaign commercials and all the rest. And so if we want to really screw things up, or if we want to transform things, we can do so by really taking a larger role in how we use the mass media. We own the airwaves. We have a hand in that if we want to step above our partisanship long enough to do so. We have a role in how the mass media is used in our society.
Well, we sure do. The big question is, who wins out, good or bad?
Well, what's good?
Yeah, well, that's true. What is good? That's a definition for that.
Well, we could say, look, what's good is that we would have a future for your grandkids and mine, an Earth that works for them. It's not, just devastated with climate change. We would have a future for our grandkids where we're not just totally fighting one another, using all of our scarce resources just to create war, but we would be working actively towards rebuilding and restoring the Earth. And thirdly, I think we would be coming together around a new sense of the universe and the wonderful things that you explore in your program, George, to a new sense of awe that we are here and the mystery of that. So we're in a pivotal time.
Well, we sure are. We sure are indeed. Now, Beyond Breakdown, Building a Promising Future, of course, is what you call that. Is that one of your latest works?
Well, it's not a book, but it's certainly a theme that I've been exploring and giving talks and so on, because so many people have a despairing view of the future, and it's understandable, because in my estimation, Our parental institutions have not been paying attention and stepping up to the challenges that we face. And a lot of people rightfully feel, across this political spectrum, they rightfully feel really worried. And so it's time for a new level of social, if we want a promising future, it's going to happen because we make it happen as ordinary citizens. We step up and we make it happen. And I think we're in this kind of in-between time right now when people are hoping we're going to go back to the old normal and fearful that we're never going to see that again and not sure what the new normal might be.
What is getting us to this point now that you're seeing this change?
Well, I think there's both a push and a pull. There's a push of necessity as we look at the converging perfect storm of climate change, species extinction, resource depletion, and I could just go down a long, long list. An enormous push of necessity. At the same time, where we started, the pull of opportunity. If you're a teenager and you're offered the keys to the car and the freedom to drive and to go live in another community and so on, that freedom is a big pull. And I do not think yet, as a human family, we have yet seen the freedom. Maybe in America, there is that freedom, but in other countries, China perhaps, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and many other countries, the pull of that freedom is just beginning to be felt. And I think the Arab Spring, a big part of that was people wanted to feel valued. They wanted to feel they could express themselves, and they were valued individual human beings.
All right, now let's talk about the living universe for what we have left of this hour and next hour as well, Dwayne.
All right.
What do you mean by the living universe? And, of course, that's the name of your book.
Yeah. Actually, this is a very, very old story. And I like to go back to Plato. And more than 2,000 years ago, he said that the universe is a single living creature, and it encompasses all living creatures within it. So it's a twofold situation. The universe, according to Plato, he said the whole thing is alive, and then within that aliveness are individual living creatures like you and me. So it's paradoxical in a way, but more and more as we learn about the universe, it is paradoxical. And as I've gone around, I've talked with people about this is not a common question to ask people whether they think the universe is alive or not. And what I found is people have very strong views. Immediately, people have very strong views. And some people will say, well, you're crazy if you think it's alive. This is just inert matter and empty space. And if you think there's anything more than that going on here than just biochemistry happening, you're crazy. Another person will be standing right beside that person will say, well, look, if you think dead matter can give rise to the complexity and beauty of the earth and we as living beings, you're crazy. You're crazy if you think it's dead at the foundations. And so immediately what I've begun to see is that there are very strong views between roughly half the people say, well, it's dead at the foundations, and the other half say, well, it's alive. And I've looked at that, and now I think I have a better understanding of it because there's a survey that's been done, and it's been done for about a half century, asking people if they've ever had a profound mystical or religious experience. And that experience oftentimes describes being connected with a universe that's alive. And in 1962, only 22% said they'd had that experience. And we go forward year by year, and in 2009, 49% said they had felt the universe as a living system with love at the foundation. They felt a sense of great peace and connection with the universe, which means that about half of the American people have had the direct experience of being connected with a living universe. So this isn't a marginal kind of experience. This is a mainstream experience. And many people dismiss that experience because the mainstream hasn't said, you know, that's really important. That's really an insight about the universe and how it's working. And you're not crazy if you think it is alive because in a subtle way, and very important way it is alive, and we can then we can begin to explore some of that.
Well, not only do I think the universe is alive, I think this planet is alive. Don't
indeed.
You?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Indeed. And so there's life within life within life, and it's just it's quite extraordinary.
When we talked back in April of 2010 about the living universe, so many things were happening technologically now, Duane, and now we've got the Kepler mission out there. It's beginning to find Earth-like planets everywhere. Something that we talked about years ago without the technology, without the equipment. We didn't have anything. We simply said we believe that the universe is teeming with life, and they'll find other planets. Heck, I remember as a kid, you know, I was in the astronomy club when I was 14 and things like that. I was one of those. I remember saying to my teachers, I think that there are hundreds of thousands. I didn't even talk about billions at the time. I didn't even know what that meant. But hundreds of thousands of planets out there in the universe.
Mm.
And you know what? At that time, people didn't find any other planets outside of our solar system.
Yeah.
They thought we were unique. And I looked at the universe and said, this is just a model for every system that's out there.
Yeah.
It's the same everywhere. And, you know, it's alive. It's part of life. It's part of universal life. And I was right.
Yes.
This little kid without any science, without any technology, without the multi-billion dollar budgets to go into space, I was right.
Way to go.
Yep. And you probably were too.
Well, I don't know. But yes, so good. Teeming with life. I think it is. I think it is. I think it's teeming with life. And as Plato said, the whole thing is a living system itself. And now more and more cosmologists are talking about, well, we live in a multiverse, that our universe is just one of an infinite, perhaps, number of other universes. And so then I like to think, well, there's a mother universe, and we're a daughter universe, and we're just one daughter among an infinite number of daughters in the mother universe. So it's quite stunning, because when Einstein developed his theory, he thought the cloud of stars that is our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, was the totality of the universe. He had no idea the scale of the universe when he developed the theory of relativity.
He should have asked me.
He should have asked you. Yes.
I mean, I would have had no theories, but I would have been going from gut and intuition.
Yeah.
And that helps.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, it's got to be alive. In order for all these things to happen, for the birth of systems, star systems to be created, it's got to be alive.
Well, I see, George, I agree with you. And I also, I just have to respect the people, because so many have spoken to me that are scientists and really well-informed. And they personally have not had the direct experience. So I suspect you not only have thought about this, but at a deep intuitive level, at some experience level, you have experienced the aliveness of the universe.
Well, absolutely. And maybe because we're a little more tuned in into the conscious realm, more so than most scientists, where they're pretty practical. You know, they don't have, most of them don't have spirituality behind them.
No. Or they may have spirituality, but they try to keep that separate.
They hide it.
Yeah.
Stay with us. We're going to come back for more with Duane Elgin on Coast to Coast AM.